Ready? Here we go.
Different points of view and highs and lows. A new perspective everywhere you go. Open up your mind, drown out the noise, and see if this connected. And see if this connected.
What's up, fam? The mission of this Connected podcast is to connect generations and situations about faith, life, and whatever comes along the way. To not necessarily agree, but be listened to. These conversations, of course, highlight the perspective of our various guests, and you are always welcome to agree or even disagree. But as always, we hope that it is done in charity. Now, here's your host, Catholic.Dad.
So, we are here with my wife, Sarah. My name's Josue. So, for those of you listening out there, this is new faces. So we're gonna have a little introduction. It's not your typical Arnell and Tony. We have some new faces here. So what we're doing today here is we're actually doing a little takeover with my wife Sarah, with our guests here who introduce themselves. So Arnell gave us the opportunity to do a little takeover as we talk about the Office of Marriage and Family Life with two of our guests here. And so we're going to let them take over, do a little intro to themselves, you know, their background, where they come from, and we'll take it from there. We'll take the discussion after they do their introductions.
Yeah, we're very excited to be here and be able to share a little bit of, you know, what we've done and where we're at. My name is Mario Martinez. I'm here with my wife, too, Paola.
And hi, everyone.
She'll talk for herself in just a minute. And we're the co-directors of the Office of Marriage and Family Life Ministry for the Diocese of San Bernardino. We've been asked to take this role since 2019, right before the pandemic. But it's been a really wonderful journey for both of us to be, you know, doing this work for the diocese. And prior to that, I was coordinating the Marriage Initiative, which was the beginning of marriage and family life for the Diocese of San Bernardino. In other words, there hasn't been before that anything particularly or very specific for the ministry. So it is now that we have an office, and one of our priorities is to, you know, let everybody know, what is the Office of Marriage and Family Life? What do we do? Why do we exist? Why is it important? So I hope we get to talk about that today.
Yeah, so that's a little bit on the ministry side. Mario and I have been married my name is Paola Martinez. I don't think I mentioned that before. We've been married for 15 years, and we have four kids. We have a teen, so she's 14. So we're navigating that season of life right now, which has been eye-opening, but it's been beautiful. It's been a beautiful time as well. And then we have an 11-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 6-year-old. So we're very busy, and we've encountered many, many challenges, as you guys can imagine, coming, you know, from families yourselves. But it's been a gift. It's been an adventure, for sure.
Nice. Yeah. And who's taking care of them right now?
That's a good question.
Her sisters. Yeah, I was curious. I was like, who's taking care of the kids right now?
It definitely takes a village. I think that's been one of the biggest gifts for us throughout our journey, is having a family that, you know, supports the work that we do by babysitting, mm-hmm. you know, our kids. And, you know, and throughout the years, if there's, you know, events or retreats or just anything that we're able to take them to, then they come with us. So we're all always usually together. But when we're not, our family, you know, grandmas, grandpas, and aunts and uncles, you know, they take over and they help out.
It's like their opportunity to do the children ministry with our children.
Yeah.
So we give them that blessing, right?
Yes, yes.
Beautiful. Well, should we introduce ourselves?
Sure.
I'll let you go first then.
All right. I'm Sarah. Here with my husband, Josue. We've been married for about 6 months, 6 months tomorrow, actually. So we got married in April in Temecula, and we're kind of just living that high of newlywed life right now. We have a cat, Ollie, who has taught us a lot of patience and stuff. But it's been such a joy just getting to live that newlywed life and, you know, just learning about each other and the sacrament of matrimony itself, which has been beautiful.
Yes. And what do you do for work?
I currently work at Holy Name of Jesus in Redlands as the assistant youth ministry coordinator for junior high and high school. I also teach religion at Sacred Heart Academy there too.
Awesome. Nice.
Awesome. Our kids yes. go there.
For their
confirmation.
Yeah, for our daughter, our teen daughter is actually in their confirmation program now. So we love the the community is really looking to bring families Definitely. Together. And so we like the fact that they have like a one day, like on Tuesdays they have, you can take all the family. All so we take full there. Advantage of it. So the little ones go to Catechism of the Good Shepherd. And then, so there's something for everyone. That's a gift.
That means it's working. It's working.
Yes, it is.
I mean, you're attracting a lot of people from around the area that understands and needs this.
Great.
Yeah, so shout out to Holy Name. Right. My name's Josue. Many of you have probably heard me previously, but married to my wife, Sarah, 6 months, like she said, tomorrow. And like myself, I mean, I am involved with youth ministry as well. Have been for probably 10 years now. I started when I was 14, 24 now, so it's been a long journey. And then for work right now, I just do clinical research at Loma Linda, so that's where we're at. But yeah, I'm excited to be able to just discuss with you too, the ministry that is family and marriage and how that looks. I mean, we're barely starting this journey, but you have been there for a while now, so we're going to be able to get some insight, and then hopefully other listeners will be able to get that insight as well. So we're going to start off first with some couple questions of your guys' story. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. So when did you guys start dating, and how did that look? We're going to start with that
question. So I worked at a bank. I had put in my 2 weeks notice, but I worked with his brother. We worked together. And the brother, he had told me, my brother, he's such a good guy. You guys should connect before, leave, this place, this job. And he was very insistent, but I wasn't really interested at that time. I was just focused on, my career and advancing. And then one day I was, at work, and I see this guy sitting down in the lobby area, and I said, wow, that guy's really handsome.
Of course.
I said, wow, he's so handsome. I said, too bad I'm leaving. He's probably here to interview for a job. And so I made up, this whole, story in my mind, oh, he's going to work here, and oh, well, too bad, moving on it, so. And then there was this other door that you could come into the building through, and it was his brother, which is my friend. And he's like, oh, hey, how you doing? How's your day going? I'm like, oh, good. He's like, oh, my brother's here. The one I've been telling you about. And then I must have said it really loud.
She did.
Because I said, that's your brother? Really excited and really loud, that he turned around and he kind of was like, what is going on?
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah. And so from that moment, I was like, oh, this is the brother you've been telling me about, and so all these thoughts, started to come to my mind. And then I don't know if you want to go.
At that point, I was already working at the diocese. I was working for the Office of Charismatic Renewal, and we were looking for funding to be able to host an event. So sponsors, and my brother was able to help me, speak to the owner of the establishment to be able to get some funding. So I was there, and I was dressed up nice and everything, of course. Yeah. And then Paula thought I was there for an interview, but I was actually there too. It was a sort of an interview, right? I was trying to get some funding. prior to that, my brother was telling me, there's a girl, she's Catholic. I don't know, he kept bringing up the whole thing, she's Catholic. Uh-huh. And I kept saying, if you're looking for someone, go for it, bro, it's all on you. There was really not a lot of interest. I was really focused on evangelization and just doing the work I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it changed that day. A few days later, after we first had that encounter, my brother calls me and I mean, I just was like, I'm working, leave me alone, right? Kind of thing. And I don't know if you remember, but there was a three-way kind of thing, lines. So he said, just hold on, I have a surprise for you. And it just went click, and there was another voice, and that was Paula. And yeah. He did the same thing to Paula. He
didn't tell me he was doing this. He was being a little tricky. So he put me on like, oh, wait, hold on. I have somebody on the line. And so he connected us through phone call. Yeah. And so we just, we talked for a little bit and I think that we exchanged numbers. At that point. And then we talked later on in the week.
We started having.
And he said, oh, I have, you know, this youth minister, this youth minister's birthday party the youth ministry here in St. George in Fontana. Mm-hmm. And you want to come? It's a group of us going to this party. And I was like, okay. But up to this point, I was not living my faith. I did my sacraments, but that was it.
What year was this?
This was in 2002.
No, I'm just like,
it was a while ago. This was in 2002.
Just trying to get a timeline.
Yes, at the end of 2002. Okay. Like,
it's been a while.
We were like 5 years old.
20 years.
20 years. Okay, it just dawned on me right now. 20 years.
Okay, wow.
So,
so St. John's.
Yeah. So he invited me to this gathering, and I really didn't know, what youth gatherings because I wasn't a part of any parish. I wasn't going to mass. I wasn't living, my sacraments. But I wanted to see this guy again. Mm-hmm.
For me, I was kind of nervous because I didn't know. I kind of knew she wasn't really into church. So
even though your brother said I'm Catholic, but she's Catholic, Catholic,
I'm gonna invite her to kind of like a first date, and we're gonna go to a youth ministry night kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was nice. I was glad that she said yes.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yes. We connected, and then you kept inviting me to things. Yeah. And
so your question was, when did you guys start dating?
Yeah, or how did that look?
Right there. I started dating right there.
He says that it was right
That was me.
I said, no, you got to say the words. Yeah. You got to say, do you want to be my girlfriend?
Yes.
That's very important.
Did that happen?
Yeah, it happened. It did a few months later, but it was, it was like maybe like six months after we started talking that you asked me formally if, I wanted to be your girlfriend.
But I still believe that if you ask me, I started dating her that day.
Well, I would say, you guys are doing stuff together. You guys are getting to know each other. I mean, those could be dates. Yeah. But once you ask that question, then it's exclusive,
But what I've learned throughout the years is that, guys have this tendency of saying, we're already dating.
Right,
girls are always usually kind of waiting for it. No, it has to be very particular, concrete. Yes. You have to ask. To
express it.
And so, guys, do what you have to do.
Intentionality, right?
Yes. Exactly, intentionality.
Ask the question.
Yes. Wow, okay. Yeah. So then, I guess I was going to say who made the first move. I would say maybe.
That's a good question.
Like, I'm trying to hear the story. Who do you think made that first
move? Yeah, well, who do you think?
Like, hearing your story, I feel like maybe Paola did.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like.
That was the one that was not evangelized.
Hey, I was trying to be a saint. Come on, right?
But then I feel like Mario was like intrigued, and he wanted to learn more, and he kind of was drawn into that. So,
One thing that he did tell me early on, I would say rather early on, is he said, I like you, but this is my life. My life. I'm living my life for Jesus. Mm. And if you want to join me for this adventure, I would love for you to join me. But he pretty much made it clear, like,
boundaries.
But like, okay, if you're not really looking at all to live this way or follow Jesus, then I don't think we need to part ways. I think it was his way of saying that.
Yeah.
And I think in the beginning, it was more, I want to see him. I want to spend time with him. Mm-hmm. And then slowly it turned into, because we would go to retreats and that. Then it became about Jesus. Then it became like, okay, wow, this is the life I've been missing out on.
Right.
And so, so that was beautiful. He was an instrument. And even before that, like when I was in college, even before I met him, there was people that God placed in my life, close friends that would invite me, to events, and I would go. And I thank God for those people. They were gifts in my life. But, I think it took the third, this, this guy, Mario, to to really show me how beautiful this life was. And a lot of our time together was actually in big groups. So it was always like we go to the movies. It was like
the whole youth leader,
you know, the prayer, you know, our prayer group youth leaders, and we would all hang out together. It was most of the time that was our dates. And there was a few times, you know, as the months went by that I would kind of say, hey, are we going to have time just you and me? I would get
side.
A little upset, like, wait a minute here.
But I do remember even telling her, you know, right now this is the stage of our life, and this mm-hmm. is how we, you know, keep ourselves safe, and this is just
right.
how we live our life right now. Mm-hmm. Once we get married, things will change. You know, mm-hmm. I'm going to be devoted to you. You know, mm-hmm. things are going to, and it did happen for the past 15 years. It has happened.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it was kind of a little bit hard to see in the beginning because it was everything. We always did everything as a group together, you mm-hmm. know, for church. But now looking back, I wouldn't change it. I think it was a blessing and a gift to live our, you know, vocation and our life that way. Yeah. Of course, when we got engaged, then things, you know, changed. When we got engaged, then we spent
and I think know, even more before time that, together. I mean, we're really involved at the diocesan level with the ministry, with ministry. And not a lot of people knew that we were actually dating. We mm-hmm. kind of kept it, you know, separate.
Very similar.
In a way. And it wasn't until we got engaged that, you know, people were kind of saying, like, we knew it.
Yeah.
There was something
about you guys. Like, you guys make a good couple, but we kind of knew it. Yeah. It took us.
But there was a lot of ladies that would come up to him and say either. And I was there, like, next to him, like, at events, you know, retreats, conferences, these things. And then they would tell him, like, you're going to be a priest. I just know it. You're going to be, you should go. And I was like, or they would say, you would be so good for my daughter. I have a daughter, and she, you know, you're such a good guy. And I was like.
I remember one particularly, she was very persistent. And we were in an event, and she was just saying all this stuff. And I didn't say, oh, no, or I just stayed quiet. And I remember Paola just rushing to the back, you know, like she was like
backstage.
Upset.
Yeah.
And I remember our friends are like, don't worry. Our close friends knew we were dating. But most people didn't.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that. Why is it interesting?
Because I feel like that was pretty much like the first couple of years of our dating relationship. Yeah. Whenever we would like, quote unquote, date, it would be like, oh, let's go to the high school night. Oh, we're going to go to the middle school night. Oh, there's this event at church. We're going to go there. So every time we dated at ministry kind of thing. And, you know, our now was not so happy about that.
But it wasn't even, it was discreet. Like, they were saying, we weren't putting it, like, you know, like, holding hands. Or, like,
well, we were at ministry. Our father, and she would
He claims that I would
you always stand next to her so you can get her hand.
I did not. I was concentrating on, you know, that relationship with my Lord, not, you know, but no.
Yeah,
but I see what you say.
We need this as human beings. It's part of life, and it, you know, this intimacy and connection is important to us.
So it did.
Yeah, I would get the, oh, he's going to be a priest comment all the time. Because we would teach First Communion together, like, very, very early. Before we even started dating, we were already teaching First Communion together. And people would come up to him, like, parents of our kids would come up to him and be like, oh, you guys are going to be a priest, you're going to be a sister. And we'd kind of just look at each other and be like, sure, yes, of course. And then even when we were engaged, people were still coming up to, like, me and being like, oh, when are you going to be a sister? Like, when are you going to go to the convent kind of thing? And I'm just like,
The greatest, let me just say this, the greatest spouses would also make a great, like, sister, nun, great priest.
Oh, right.
Because if you have that vocation of being a father, you know, or being a mother, any avenue you take, like, would be great, right? But ultimately, it's what God is calling you and, your spouse together to do, and that's what marriage is. So definitely. I guess that brings us to our next question. When did you know you were called to marry? Or marry each other?
Well, there's two questions there, right?
Yeah.
When you're called to marriage and then when you're called to marry to each other.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I always kind of knew, you know, I wanted to have a family. I want to have children. Even during this phase of my life when I was really involved in church, it was pretty much after college. people were very persistent, even priests. Come join us, you know.
Yeah.
Different orders. And I knew I didn't even go to a vocational retreat. I knew I wanted to get married. It was like already placed in my heart. Mm-hmm. That's the first question I want for you. Mm-hmm.
For me as well. I think I always knew that I wanted to have a family. I wanted to be married. It was just always something that it was on my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
The vocation of marriage. And this is even before I knew, you know, what it really meant and the sacrament.
Right.
But I think because I had good role models as well growing up, you know, my parents and just others around me in my life. I think that stays with you. I think mm-hmm. that does stay with you. I just always knew that that's I wanted beautiful. To get married one yeah. day. Yeah.
How about the second question? You
start. Marry each other.
Oh, how did I know?
How did you want to marry you?
We'll go to the second one.
Oh yeah, I think from the moment I saw you in that lobby in that bank, I knew.
Wow. Way back then.
No, you know, you hear this, right? Like, oh, it was at first, you know, a glance I saw and I knew that's the man I'm going to marry. No, it wasn't so much that like that. I think it just that just over the years, over the months and the years that we spent time together, and I just saw the way that he was with his friend, you know, with his friends in the ministry, with mm-hmm. his family, you know, how devoted he was. It was just wow. This is, you know, he's a good man.
Security.
Yeah, he's a good man. He's a good man, and those qualities were there. Those qualities that I could see myself. You know, with some, you know, with Mario.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. But it wasn't like one moment thing, like a one day I said, yes, yeah. I want to marry him. It's just, you know, I really couldn't tell you when it happened. It just did. Now, there were moments, I think, throughout our, you know, journey, because we dated for like 4 years before we got engaged, that were really hard. They were hard moments, really hard. And so I would question, like, is this really what you want from me, God?
Mm-hmm.
She dumped me, man.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but, what? It was a good... Yeah. Wow, you just jumped ahead.
You just dated. Whoa, let's go. What happened there? What happened there?
Yeah, it was...
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, there was throughout the time, there was different times that I would, you know, doubt, is this something that you want from me? Is you want me to get married, you know, to him one day? Do you want us to continue this relationship, God? And I spent a lot of time in prayer, actually at St. Mary's, you know, before the Blessed Sacrament, because I worked in Moreno Valley. So I would take, you know, Valley Way down.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it was, you up know, it was hill, before I got home.
Yeah.
Yeah, before I got home, I would stop. And I spent a lot of time there and a lot of tears shed there, a lot of prayers. But God just kept opening the doors. Like he still kept that, you know, that unity between us somehow throughout the months. And so that was my confirmation that, you know, this is of you, God. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was an occasion there that, you know, Mario wasn't the best version of himself. And I said,
let me talk about how the warm, right? For me, hold on. Okay. So I think, you know, typical guy, I think it was the moment I started dating her that I said, this is her. Mm-hmm. I did imagine like, oh, wow, mm-hmm. she could be it. She could be the person that I'm going to marry. Now, it didn't meant that I wanted to get married to her right there and then. I mean, to me, it was like, hold on. Let me just think this through. And, you know, let's, again, very typical, right? We want to prolong marriage at times. You know, let's just wait till the moment is there.
Right.
And it took me a while. It did. You know, originally, we're like, okay, within 2 years, we kind of need to make a decision of where this relationship is going. We don't want to just prolong the relationship. But 2 years came in, I said, hold on, I need to just still, I'm still meditating of when, not necessarily if it's her, but it's when I should get married. I'm ready for that. But then the date just came. It was, I still remember, I just felt it. It's like, this is it. Mario, go propose, you know, I thought it was kind of like a day and night kind of experience for me. When it was like, okay, I mean, it wasn't a doubt that it was her to be married or not. It was just the when.
When's the right time?
But during the process, yes, you could talk about it. And I'll add to it.
Yeah, it's just, it was.
But it's a good thing. It's a really good thing.
Yeah, it was an experience where, you know, he wasn't as truthful as he could have been. Mm-hmm. Nothing too, you know,
dramatic.
Crazy or, you know, him, you know, talking to somebody else, another girl or anything, nothing like that. But yeah, he was just wasn't the best version of himself. And I said, wait, I think we need, I think this is not okay. And so I let him know, and I was very clear with my, you know, decision that we needed time and my expectation. Yeah. I said, I don't want this, you know, I don't want, you know, our relationship to be this way. And I don't want this in, you know, in our married life. I want us to be honest with each other. And so we need time. We need some time apart.
So it was, and I appreciate that even till today, because it kind of did, you know, place a pillar, I would say, in our relationship, because, I mean, I did felt the whole process of losing, you know, the loss of a loved one, because, mm-hmm. I mean, it was a situation where I went to my dad's birthday party, and I told her I was going to go, and then I didn't. And I did, and then I did go, and I told her I didn't go, but then she found out right away.
Yeah,
because one of our mutual friends, I was talking to one of our mutual friends, like, oh yeah, we had fun at his, you know, his dad's birthday party, and then I was like,
what?
Yeah, oh no, she didn't even watch. She just, next day that I stopped by, she just gave me a letter, and that was the breakup.
Wow.
That was
where? At St. Mary's in the parking lot. Yep.
Our home parish.
your home parish.
Well, I actually asked her to be my girlfriend there in the parking lot, too.
Yes. Wow.
So there's a lot of things. I know.
St. Mary's, go, people. Go to St. Mary's.
But something interesting that I just wanted to point out before we move forward is the way that Paola kind of was calling you to a higher standard.
Yes.
And that's what women do, right? They call men to a higher standard of living. Like, if ultimately you choose this vocation to be a husband to your wife, it's because they see you with an eyes that are set. Like, you have to reach those standards that they set for you, and that's it. I mean, and rightfully so. They should have, like, women should have that ability, or, you know, that way of thinking, that
right?
Inclination to them. Because they call us men out of ourselves to a higher standard that we should be living, and we need to, you know, meet those standards, right? We just had a little argument about that.
We did.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm still in that honeymoon high.
Well, it was an argument, but a discussion where, you know, like, she was like, you know, I expect you to meet these standards that I'm setting out, you know, to pursue me and to continue to pursue me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, we're married, but it doesn't stop there, the pursuit of her. And, you know, we can't fall lazy to that. So so women set that standard, and rightfully so. Just wanted to, you know, put that out there.
And I think definitely. It's beautiful because, again, you know, I think it really gave our marriage a tune since that moment. This is Paola. She's not going to just let this go. And it was, I mean, we could go back and we laugh about it, like, come on, it was kind of dumb, right? It was,
yeah,
it wasn't a big deal. I was with my family, right?
Most of the arguments.
But at the same time, it's in those moments that you need to capture these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't let them just go, because they will become something bigger.
Yeah.
It is then and there where, you know, we're putting the tune of what our marriage is going to look like and how do we want our marriage to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been times those very intentional and very visible, and there's other times that have been less visible and but intentional still, where both of us do this, and we should, and we continue, and it hasn't stopped. I mean, 15 years and we're still, you know, growing and learning, and growing to know each other in a lot of ways still.
It's beautiful.
So it does not stop.
It doesn't.
Yeah. Well, that's beautiful. I guess this leads us into the meat of this discussion. Well, I guess we can start. How has your personal marriage been the avenue to your guys' work or your ministry?
Wow, I think it's been in the center. We've been blessed.
Mm-hmm.
I feel blessed to, you know, we were only 2 years into our marriage when we were doing this work at the diocesan level.
Okay.
Before that, of course, we were living our faith to the fullest. I would say we were trying to do our best as any other Christian, trying to fulfill their vocation at the same time, live their lives and do, you know, become the best versions of ourselves. But by becoming part of this ministry, it's like, we can't do ministry if we don't live what we're teaching or what we expect from other families in our diocese.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a challenge, but at the same time, I mean, I think from the whole diocese, who has benefited the most has been us.
So much learning has taken place over the years that we've been able to do this work. And no, we never imagined that we would be doing you know, work with couples and families. We were really involved with the prayer group, with a charismatic renewal prayer group at our parish. And then an opportunity came up to attend a seminar. I think it was a seminar at the diocese, at the Pastoral Center, and they were looking for couples because the diocese had received a grant for couples to get trained to teach communication skills, relationship skills. And so it was an opportunity, and we went for it.
They encouraged us,
but our pastor was the one that told us about the seminar. It was the Holy Spirit, you know. Yeah. He must have seen something, and he invited us, and we went. And you know, they were looking for couples to start in this new project, and we went for it. Got trained, and we started teaching, you know, relationship skills to couples. And you know, when you teach, you know, you're learning, you need to apply the tools and the skills that you're teaching others. So yeah, that's how we started our work with couples. In a different way, when we were in the youth group, I think the Holy Spirit was already, before we even got married, the Holy Spirit was already kind of showing us the importance of family life, right? And the importance of marriage, because we would see these teens with, you know, so many problems and so many difficulties. And it was most of the time because of the family life that they were living. And so we tried to do, even at that time, back, I'm like, oh, it was so amateur. We really didn't know much, but we wanted to, you know, have workshops for like the parents of these young kids coming to the prayer group, you know, just, you know, basic stuff. Yeah. I remember. And then years later, you know, God calls us again to this work. It's been a beautiful journey to see just the change, and then people that, you know, took the classes way in the beginning when we started teaching, and they actually learned something, you know, from us. And they'll come and they'll say, you know, like, wow, you know, those tools we learned really, you know, transformed my marriage. Or we were on the brink of, you know, divorce, and we're like, wow, praise God. Like, God, you want families to, you know, thrive. You want families to be healthy and happy. And we've seen so many miracles. Many miracles, and like Mario, so like you said, you know, in our own marriage, just, you know, the benefits and the fruits.
Perfect in any way. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have our arguments, and sometimes I think I am making arguments, and Paola thinks she's nothing. She's happy.
I'm sure she thinks that of you too.
I'm just kidding,
Sarah. Of course. Well,
that's okay. I mean, we could talk about perspective, right?
Yeah.
You all have our different perspectives.
Definitely.
But that we're not perfect. But again, what we have learned through the process, what we keep learning, and what we're trying to encourage others to do, is to just keep trying, right? And becoming the best versions of ourselves in our marriage, in our families. And it takes a lot, but it's possible. It has been possible for us because we try to help each other when we start noticing, you know. Mm-hmm. And we have had throughout the years difficult conversations where we have used these skills that we teach in our own real life experiences. And it has helped us turn around. I mean, sometimes it takes longer than other times because pain is real. The struggle is real in marriage and family. Mm-hmm. But it's possible. And then, you know, the joy of reconciliation, the joy of forgiveness, the joy of just love. Comes in, and it's a wonderful experience too. You know what Pope Francis has been telling us, to encourage our families to use the word forgive me, right? Please. Sorry.
Thank you.
I mean, it is true. It's such as wonderful things to adapt and apply in our families. And we try with our kids too, and we try, you know, there's times that I'm not like Paula says, I'm not the best version of my own kids sometimes. You know, we lose it, and then we come back, we humble ourselves, come back, and just say, I'm sorry, I should have done better.
Yeah.
You know, and we hope that that's going to help them have a different life than we did, perhaps.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything to add on?
No, I think I would just like to point out that, like, even early on in our relationship and our engagement, you guys were the couple that we, like, would look up to in terms of, like, you know, Beloved Conference, that amazing conference the diocese held. Like, you guys were the ones leading that. And we're kind of like, we weren't even engaged. We weren't even, like, very far into our relationship at that point. But we were like, that's so cute. I want to live like they do, kind of thing. especially because we were also very service-based. So, like, our entire relationship, and literally our entire relationship was based off of our service to ministry, our catechism classes, all these things. So seeing other couples living the same thing was kind of just like, oh,
wow,
it exists. We're not the only ones. We're not the only crazy ones who like serve 100% of our time and like are still trying to discern a sacrament kind of thing. So for us, it was super eye-opening seeing that there were other couples who are living their faith and living their marriage and the sacrament and all those graces that are poured into that sacrament so beautifully into like their ministry and their service. And I think that was just, it was healthy for us to see that. So we're grateful for your work because we love seeing that fruit come out.
Thank you. Thank you. We're encouraging us.
It's neutral encouragement.
Yeah.
Of course.
Thank you. Something funny I just wanted to add that I've said. Let me know what your thoughts are for couples that are preparing for marriage. I've always thought that part of the marriage prep process for them should include teaching a catechism class, or at the very least aiding in a catechism class, because you're able to work together with children, first communion, whatever it is, and seeing like how you work with each other, work with children, and how you are able to, you know, come up with
problem solving skills
that are dealing with one another. Yeah. So what do you guys think about that?
That's brilliant.
Yeah. I never thought about it, to be honest. Yeah. Not in the context you're placing it. I mean,
because we taught a class for 2-3 years?
4 years.
4 years?
Wow. So you guys have been co-parenting for a while.
Yeah. So yeah, we taught first year and second year catechism. Or first communion.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, a couple should be doing this because we're able to see how I'm able to see how she problem solves and how she thinks and how she responds to stress with children and that environment.
And we're very different, very, very different in terms of like pre-planning, planning, organization.
I believe discipline too, right?
So seeing it kind of play out and seeing how like, well, like complementarity of the sexes is just like play like 100% into that. So I attribute like the success of like our discernment to that 100% because it showed us how we work, how we deal with each other, you know, how to be patient with each other. And it was just, I think it was 100% like a success.
Yeah. So if the office of catechesis comes on here, this is a little recommendation for them. But
it's a partnership between marriage and family life and catechesis, right?
But yeah, I mean, I digress a little bit, but for those listeners or those listening that haven't really heard of your guys' office, what is the mission of the Office of Marriage and Family Life? I don't know if that's that's a loaded question.
No, the mission of the office is first of all, we are there to assist our bishop, Bishop Rojas, in his ministry to the diocese, to the people of San Bernardino. And with that, we are focused on the area of marriage and family life at the ministry level. Now, sometimes it's hard to comprehend that because, you know, before 2019, we didn't have an office of marriage and family life in our diocese. Mm-hmm. So therefore, the structures in our parishes, in our locality, it's kind of hard to comprehend. Well, what is that? We could often say, well, every ministry has a family component, right? And it's true. I mean, every office, every ministry out there, kind of it's inclined in one way or another to, you know, connect with families, help families, either specifically a unit of the family or the family as a whole. Now, for the most part, all of that is called advocacy. We should all advocate for the family, and the church advocates for the family. Now, when we talk about marriage and family life ministry, it's particularly accompanying, journeying with, doing ministry with the families, members of the families, couples. So it's kind of like to like kind of ministry. Sometimes you see them in support groups, you know, in preparation for the sacrament of matrimony. That's part of it. For those that are seeking enrichment, you know, for those that are seeking restoration, perhaps. For those that are now, you know, at the end of their marriage, because at the end of the day, you know, it's hard to take this in, but every marriage ends. We even say it when we're doing our vows, right? Till marriage, till death do apart. So then marriage will end. So then when we talk about marriage and family life ministry, it's these pillars. You know, again, marriage preparation, all, everything that has to do with that. You know, working with young people in their discernment process, working with families to understand, you know, the discernment process, working with and seriously dating couples, working with those that are engaged. And then not only that, but even working with the couples that have been married at least the five first years. So yours are still in that category of marriage preparation. And then you have the marriage enrichment piece, which what marriage enrichment is just this ongoing process that we need to acquire new skills or new understandings to be continue living as best as we can. Every marriage should be in one kind or any type of marriage enrichment. That could be from reading a book, watching a movie together, and then just saying, wow, I want to do that as a couple. To, you know, sharing, sometimes
going on a retreat.
Going to retreats, or, you know.
Yeah, to a conference together, talking to other couples, going out to dinner with, you know, a couple, you know, older couples.
So what we've learned is that every couple needs an enrichment process during life transitions. So as you became engaged, you had some kind of marriage enrichment at that point already. And that could just be talking with family and friends about what this vocation was going to bring to your life. Once you got married, you know, you need that, you know, moving away from home and now becoming one in your own place. There's this need of enrichment. Even right now, like, how do we continue pursuing each other? That's a call to your enrichment. You know, now that we're married, we're both working, we're both doing this. Yes, but how do we do it? Enrichment comes in. And then there goes children, you know, empty nesters, and you keep moving through the stages. Even when there's sickness in the family, how do we deal with that? You need enrichment in the family.
So right now we have next to our bedside the books now that Marty and I are reading have to do with the teenage brain. Reaching ourselves
with that stage of our life.
That's where we're, you know, we are right now is learning because it's new to us. All about, you know, this new season in our married life and our family life.
And then so again, marriage enrichment comes in when there's just natural transitions of our marriage and family life. Often it's missed though, I think. It's still misunderstood in our diocese or at least in the pastoral work that we do. And then you have the restoration. Now, the restoration, you know, sometimes we all need kind of restoration because since in our lives, sometimes some couples need more than others. So then it's typically that when because of sin, we have become broken, distance, and we need some kind of assistance. A little bit more like not just the let's read a book together, but let's get some counseling. Let's talk to someone to help us. Let's go in a journey where it's going to help us grow from wherever we're at to become once again holy, become one. And that's restoration. Do most of us need restoration? Sometimes we do in specific areas, but it's harder for us to identify, even sometimes admit, you know?
Something that we've noticed over the years is that when couples are invited, like when they have an announcement at the end of Mass, there's going to be a couples retreat or this event for couples, but a lot of couples don't sign up. Because they think it's only for couples that are in crisis, or only for couples that are, you know, their marriages are falling apart. Oh, I don't need that.
Yeah, my marriage is fine.
And so
there's misconception of what, you know, marriage enrichment and marriage restoration is. So what we're trying to do as an office here in San Bernardino in our ministry is kind of like right now, kind of separate them both. You know, so that it's cleared. Even the ministries allow them to understand, because just a few years ago, I asked a group of leaders that do marriage ministries in their parishes, what do they do more of? And they would say that they were doing marriage enrichment. However, the content of the, you know, of what they were doing, actually, the experience they were providing, or the just the curriculum they were providing, it all indicated that it was more restoration. So, of course, then people, you know, see what's going on, and they say, "Oh, well, you know, I'm okay." You know, we sometimes don't know. It takes time for someone to admit to their faults.
Yeah, yeah.
But what we do know is that as you go through an enrichment process, you will come to terms to understand what are the areas that I do need to work on. Mm-hmm. And the hope is that once that comes in, then the other areas of ministries are there. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some couples that do completely understand that their marriage is in such a crisis that they need like intervention mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. And there's those types of ministry out there as well. And we're trying to also provide these programs where, you know, any person in our diocese have access to, you know, attend a session in any time of the week. Mm-hmm. And they could just have that support. Mm-hmm. So because when a person or a couple's in that moment in their lives, the sense of hopelessness, the sense of I'm alone, nobody else is going through this is tremendous. Mm-hmm. And sometimes having access to counseling or other kind of help, sometimes we don't even want to go to those help because we don't understand it. So we want to be
able to. There's a lot of stigma.
There's stigma, yeah. Too.
It's like we hear a lot about the, you know, mental health and stigma, and mm-hmm. and there's a lot of stigma around going to a, you know, marriage retreat, yeah. or, you know, right. Accepting help or, and I love the comparison that you make with that when a person needs help, like counseling or something, it's like putting on glasses to read better or getting a stool to reach the high places. It's a tool. It's a tool to help us be or the better version of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So what we're aiming to do here in San Bernardino, specifically with Marriage and Family Life, and the area of just enrichment and restoration is to really get to the point where we do somehow, you know, create a culture where married couples do understand that and want to, you know, go on ongoing formation for their marriage and ongoing mm-hmm. enrichment processes. Mm-hmm. And again, it could be very structured as a come to a retreat, or it could be, you know, I'm at home, but it's intentional. Mm-hmm. We're doing this mm-hmm. for us. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, right now you're just starting 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. But there's couples that have been married and they don't even go on their dates anymore. They don't understand mm-hmm. what, you know, they're just two people living together, trying to raise kids, and there's no intimacy and connection anymore.
Yeah.
And as that parts away, and we're human and we need intimacy and connection, we're going to look for intimacy and connection whenever, wherever we can. Mm-hmm. And it could be with the, you know, addictions and stuff like that too. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And find it
seen,
in someone else.
And mm-hmm. we've seen a lot of that over the years as well with couples that are in pain. They're struggling mm-hmm. and they're in pain because of this loss of intimacy and connection and just not knowing how to communicate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they just don't know. They don't know where to start, what to do. And that's something that we always like to share too. When we first got married, that was the first thing. That was the number one thing that people would tell us. It's all about communication. You know, if you can communicate well, things will go well in your marriage. But then nobody told us exactly how to do that.
So marriage ministry here in San Bernardino is, you know, these areas of ministry where it's very concrete, very specific in helping the families and journeying with the families, walking, accompanying the families, couples, mm-hmm. married couples, people that are discerning for the vocation. Mm-hmm. In the process of all that, I mean, there's a lot of elements. Mm-hmm. The USCC bishops just published a document. It's a pastoral framework where it talks about 24 different areas of the ministry. Most of them have to do with accompaniment. So there's a lot to it. Mm-hmm. So, and I think here in San Bernardino, we're still defining it. We're still implementing it. We're still mm-hmm. discovering it. Parish are still doing that too. So you'll see it in a few in the years to come.
Anything to add?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you guys were saying that, you know, Office Marriage and Family Life is very devoted to specifically the ministry aspect of, or like the at the parish level, right? So I guess at the very groundwork of it, how can specific ministries, because I know there's a lot of listeners here from Disconnected that specifically work, not only just with those that are discerning whether they want to be married, but already in that marriage ministry, working with couples that are married, might have, you know, one kid, two kid, or already have a few. So I guess at the ground level, how can ministries reach out to your office to get that support in their at the parish level where they're at? So how would they be able to do that?
So first of all, they could always call us. We mm-hmm. have a, what do you call it? An open door policy, right?
Not yeah.
to begin with. But I think, you know, we have structures of what the office provides and what is marriage and family life ministry. But within those structures, there's a lot of flexibility of, you know, meeting where people are at and mm-hmm. meeting the needs of a parish or the needs of a community. Mm-hmm. For instance, if you go up to the mountains here, there's a lot of people, a lot of couples that are retired, meaning they're empty nesters.
Yeah.
So we're not going to provide a family ministry with children if we know most of them are in a different stage of life. Mm-hmm. So then definitely if there's a community that has a specific need, the structures are going to help us to identify, but then we'll find also the specific curriculum perhaps mm-hmm. that they need or the focus of the ministry depending on what the needs are. There's other communities where homeschooling is very, you know, big in that community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then therefore let's do ministry with those families and their needs. So in that sense, we're looking and we're hoping that our office is as flexible mm-hmm. to help accommodate to the needs of the community, of the parishes. Mm-hmm. But still, there is a structure that we're trying to put in place,
okay.
Which is still flexible, but it helps us define what we were just talking about, you know, the mm-hmm. marriage preparation, the marriage enrichment, the marriage restoration, and also the end of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we put all those together within the parish community?
Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. Anything yeah. to add? No? Okay, so moving forward, how do you guys envision yourselves best serving? There was different, you know, stages that you had already mentioned. So how do you guys envision yourselves best serving them? Say you were to go visit XYZ parish. How do you best envision seeing yourself implementing some various resources that you guys may have, different programs that the office may have? How do you envision yourselves being able to do that with a specific parish?
First of all, with the help of the pastor
okay.
and the help of the listeners. I mean, this ministry is not about Paola and Mario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our name is not like here. This is it's us that's doing this. No, mm-hmm. in no means. It is the ministry that yes, we are leading, and yes, we take that responsibility, of course. But it is more in how do we equip others, and sometimes mm-hmm. there's a lot of you out there that, you know, you're already equipped. They're equipped.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So then we partnership. We do a lot mm-hmm. of partnerships. So I think that's kind of more of our vision, right?
Yes, it's nurturing these relationships that have been, you know, that with, like, with the pastors, because this type of work, you know, it's not something that you can just go in and overnight expect, you know, big changes.
Right.
You need to once again, this word accompaniment, right? That accompaniment, that mutual relationship, that asking the pastor at the parish, you know, how are you doing? How's your family? How are, yeah. you know, how are your parents? How's, you know, your siblings? And, you know, mm-hmm. they love talking about their family. They love it. And so those little ways, I think, you know, open doors, you know, and open hearts. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, we've heard stories where, you know, pastors are not so open or not so willing to, you know, have, mm-hmm. you know, different, you know, ministries with marriage and family. And I really do think it's because we know we haven't invested as much in the relationship, you know, with the pastor
mm-hmm.
Or with the leaders.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. So we just sometimes say, oh, they're just complicated, you know, and they don't, you know, they don't want to hear it. No, you know, I think it takes time. All good things take time. And so it's, you know, like in the beginning of our marriage, when we started teaching these classes, you know, from the beginning, we tried to be intentional in the relationships,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's why this wonderful team, you know, like our you know, our vicariate representatives and
advisory
you
board,
know, our advisory board of the
members.
Office, like they've been committed to the work because we've had this mutual nurturing mm-hmm. of a relationship. So yeah, it's about relationships,
yeah,
relationships and community, and that's gonna bring the fruit,
right?
The fruit.
Anything to add with the pastors there?
No, I think it, like you said, this ministry, marriage and family life, is super relational.
Yeah.
And I think that's at the basis of everything that we do. So if we have that relationship with the pastor, then allowing ourselves to develop that relationship with the ministers who are within that parochial mm-hmm. setting already. And I think it just comes down to, like, getting dirty and, like,
yes.
getting going in there, immersing yourself in the community.
Yeah.
And, you know, as someone who works in youth ministry, it's like, definitely immersing yourself in their own families and getting to know their names and their stories. Like Mario said, everyone has a story, everyone have a history. So we need to like get out of the mentality of like, oh, they're just complicated, I don't want to deal with them. It's like, no, we have to be intentional and relational. And I think that's just across the board in ministry. If you're going to work in ministry, you have to be intentional. You have to be willing to be relational. And I think that sometimes we get in our mindset, especially as Latinos, we're like, things are done one way, that we're not going to stray from that. But in the end, it's not effective. So it's learning to be flexible and relational with each other.
Yeah. And I also think bringing in the pastor again, the role that they play is very crucial. Sometimes it's often overlooked, their specific role with the families in their own parish, and then the pastor's actually getting to know, you know, again, being intentional and getting to know each family member, you know, what dynamic that they have. You know, every family is different and their dynamic is different. So there's been stories that my wife has told me where she goes to, you know, daily mass sometimes, and there's a family there with their baby, and the baby's crying, and then the pastor is like looking at them, and, like, what did the pastor say?
Like asking them to like leave and stuff. So like, you need to like teach your kids and stuff.
Yeah, and it's like, and there are some pastors out there, you know, that maybe we need to. It probably comes from ourselves, like speaking with the pastor and you know, reminding them that we need to continue to have an open environment where that's open to not only life but the family and the children, because you know, ultimately a church that is crying is a church that is growing, you know. There's babies there's families there, so it may even take, you know, on our part, you know, working with our pastors to continue to support an environment that's open to families, and you know, and being open to families means being open to conflict, because you know, there's conflict in families. Being open to all the dirty, the, you know, stuff the that drama. Happens within the family, the drama, the messiness. So I feel like it's also on our part to push our pastors to be open to that environment. You
know, also, not only the pastors, but I think we went through this, right? Where, you know, we tried to contain our children as best possible. Mm-hmm. We didn't stop going to mass, but there were some people that would give us like dirty looks, right? Like,
like it happens.
And we're like, you know, the cry room,
and they're like, didn't you have children? And it seemed like they forgot.
It's not forgetting.
So we're trying not to, you know, and just even sometimes when we see families struggling, you know, at the end of the mass, we're like, keep it up. Look at our kids. They're gonna grow and it's gonna get better.
Well, you're in it, you know, you're living it. It seems like it's gonna take forever.
The baby crying, me sweating.
Oh, definitely.
But and then people like not understand. I mean, at least that's how they made me feel. Like they didn't understand that we were trying to do our best and trying to keep our children to learn, because there was no other way for them to learn but to just be there, you know.
It is on our part to encourage the families, you know, like,
if you're doing your family, best, please encourage them.
Definitely. I mean, even like personally with my sister, sometimes she asks like, oh, are our kids allowed at this event? When I like tell her about different events that are happening at Sarah's work or around the diocese, like, are kids allowed? Because, you know, as a parent, you think about that first, will I be able to bring my kid? Because, you know, he may cry, he may be, you know, acting out, and that shouldn't be the mentality that we're putting out to the families that we have here in our diocese. It should be that they're always welcome at the events that we're holding.
Especially because we live in a society that looks to kids as like a burden. Yeah. It seems like a downfall, like, oh, you have kids, I'm so sorry, kind of thing. And in reality, it's like, you have kids, it's amazing, they're cute, I just want to eat their little cheeks, you know, kind of thing. So we live in a society where, like, oh, you have a kid, I'm so, like, you know, it's a burden, you know, it's seen as, like, oh, you messed up kind of thing.
Yeah.
When in reality, we as, like, Christians, as Catholics, we need to be, like, that's amazing, congratulations. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We need to, like, reach out to them with love and be super intentional with how we're approaching that.
Yes.
So we can shift that mentality and shift the mentality of, like, oh, a child is a burden to a child is a gift given from God. Yes. And that starts, you know, if you see someone crying, you know, we do it all the time where we see someone crying with a baby crying and they like leave and we're like, you're doing good. You're doing great.
Yeah.
Like we love it. Yes, it doesn't bother us.
Yeah.
And like, I've had to do it sometimes where I go to daily mass and, mm-hmm. you know, the mom's like, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, you have nothing to be sorry about. Like, right. do not apologize.
Yeah.
And it simply just comes to them or like yeah. at the grocery store. Like if you see a mom carrying the kid with the groceries, we're like, I'll push your cart, you push the baby kind of thing.
Yes.
Right. And it's just meeting them where they're at. And I think that even in that, that's marriage and family life ministry.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Equipping people to be able to minister like that outside of the parochial settings, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it doesn't have to happen in the parish wherever we go, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's the domestic church.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we were at the store the other day and there was a pregnant lady and I had to help her put some stuff in her car so she would announce. So it's like little things like that you're doing out in the world, people notice and, you know, maybe
it'll allow them to feel seen more than anything. Like you are seen, you are valued, you are cherished. You know, I think that's something that's needed.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Any thoughts?
Absolutely.
Oh, we could keep talking. so much that we've done.
No, yeah.
Yeah, we have some scenario questions, I guess, or maybe what's your opinion on this?
Hopefully you can come up
with.
So, with your office, a divorced non-Catholic, you know, you guys get a phone call or something or, you know, someone comes up to you and asks, like, I'm divorced, I'm a non-Catholic, but I'm seeking to marry a Catholic person. Would I need an annulment? Or how do I go about that process to be able to, you know, get married in the Catholic Church?
Yes, you would definitely need an annulment mm-hmm. because once when you exchange vows, for us Catholics, the exchange of the vows and the altar, that's like the ultimate, right? It gives us to give us the gift of the sacrament of matrimony. It's in that moment when the priest declares, you know, married, right?
You're mm-hmm.
married. So us being able to, you know, give ourselves the consent and the vows could happen not only in the parish. I mean, it happens in the drive-thrus at some places, right? And so then, you know, when you're seeking for an annulment, for the declaration of annulment, it's not like you're seeking to be divorced. Mm-hmm. You're seeking to state for the church to recognize or to give you the recognition that that marriage didn't occur. It didn't happen. That exchange was invalid. Mm-hmm. So therefore you're free. Right, to really married. So when a non-Catholic gets married in their own way, they're exchanging their vows.
Mm-hmm.
So then the church takes that serious.
Yeah.
So therefore, if that person divorced and now seeking to marry now a Catholic in the Catholic Church, they will have to go through an annulment process.
Okay.
And it's troubling because I've had those phone calls where mm-hmm. individuals are very upset because for some reason, the priest, where they're trying to receive their sacrament, or it's called a mixed marriage, saying that perhaps they're not converting, but the Catholic party wants to have a Catholic ceremony. You know, they're at this belief of why I'm not even Catholic. Why am I going to go through a Catholic process?
Mm-hmm.
But see, the Catholic Church wants to make sure that you are not already involved in another marriage,
mm-hmm.
That your vows didn't really take some validity within, mm-hmm. you know, another relationship. For us as Catholic, I mean, it's kind of basic. It's like, it has to be in the church, you know, a place of worship. So that's why we cannot get married in the beach somewhere else. It has to be with a minister of the church, which in our particular scenario is a priest or a deacon. Now, there's probably other places in the world where the bishop, the local ordinary, may give the privilege to a lay person to mm-hmm. perform the wedding. But it's really in more places where you really don't have church ministers, priest, or clergy. Mm. I asked Bishop once, will you ever give me that? And he's like, no.
Did you tell me that?
He's like, no. Okay, I want to marry my kids.
We have plenty of clergy.
Thanks be to God. Right, or
that's
something.
Hilarious.
But so then the other is that they have to have consent. I mean, it's they're there at the parish because of their own free will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it gets a lot of us mm-hmm. in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, because that could be very complex once you start dissecting what is free will. And then, of course, that they understand what the sacrament or what they're getting themselves into. And that also gets us in trouble because, mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes people think they are and then they realize, well, I had no idea what the heck I was doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why a few years ago, Pope Francis says, you know, if we really dive into all of the different marriages, I'll find a lot of unknown. People made it like a scandal. Like, oh, Pope is saying that every marriage could be divorced. Well, no, he didn't say that. He just said we're just... Yeah. I mean, not prepared.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But does it mean that you are automatically given an annulment? You have to apply for annulment.
Right.
And then it happens.
Right.
So it could be like a marriage is, you know, a marriage is a marriage until proven it's not a marriage, in other words. So mm-hmm. what do I say to these couples that, or this person that comes that, you know, I try to encourage them. I try to make sure that they understand. There's a lot of pastoral work there. You know, mm-hmm. a couple conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Let them call me back again so that after I told them, yeah, you have to do it. You have, you know, but please call me back. I could, you know,
journey with
you. And then I also have really good ministers out there that are advocates for the annulment process, which are really pastoral, very wonderful. So I refer them to them as well.
Okay.
And then they journey with them. Mm-hmm. But it's a harsh reality for some people because mm-hmm. Sometimes they might even find out that whatever marriage they had is... It's not a sacrament, but it is valid.
So
it's not going to be easy to you know, annulment.
Definitely.
So easily. So it takes time.
Yeah.
Okay. So one, I have two questions for you. What would be your response to a couple who is coming for advice for a marriage, but they are already cohabitating and already have children, but they want to get married in the church? What would be the appropriate response to that? Or how would you approach that situation?
So the first part, I think I'll say the first part, but it's definitely with a spirit of compassion, you know, because a lot of times these couples are met with rejection, you know, or judgment, or they're already living in sin. Like, what good could come out of this, you know? And then sad. It's very sad that we can have that approach or that mentality.
Yeah.
So it's definitely with compassion, first of all, encouragement, like you said, lots of encouragement that we are there to walk with them, to journey with them in their particular need. Because it's amazing that after all these years, no two situations are the same. Like, you know, all the couples that we've worked with, there's been, you know, many situations, just as like the question that you ask, cohabitating couples, that, you know, that no two situations are the same. So really taking the time to listen to them, to listen to their story and where they're coming from, and be willing to listen and not to, like, I have all the answers here and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to throw, you know, all this knowledge that I have at you. So just first and foremost is to listen, to really listen before we try to give advice or before we try to to give any type of advice. Is that accompanying piece, that listening piece, that embrace, embracing, and, you know, embrace them, because, you know, you could be the reason that they really walk away completely from the church, or that they open their heart, start opening their heart to being a part of the church.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and as Paula's saying this, we start with congratulations, you know, thank you for your decision. Just like any other engaged couple that are seeking the sacrament of matrimony.
Mm-hmm.
Something different that I do encourage those that are convalidating their matrimony, their marriage, because, I mean, if they're civilly married already, I mean, they're married. They're just not in a valid sacramental marriage.
Yeah.
But I do encourage them to, you know, really meditate on what is it that they're looking for. There's an often assumption that, you know, and that's why it scares a lot of couples from even seeking the sacrament of matrimony, or for it to become a sacrament, because they're thinking that they're going to just, now that they receive the sacrament, it's going to be more challenging, and the devil's going to come, you know, and it's going to attack them, and their marriage is going to be ruined. And there's actually even some people that have even have affirmation that that has happened to them, right? That, you know, now that we got married, the sacrament, things got worse. The truth is, from my observations and also studies, that things were already worse. And very often they come to seek for the sacrament as a, you know, a token or something, you know, something magical to really now transform our marriage. And now after I receive the blessing, things are going to be completely different. And that's not the truth. I mean, of course, they have God's grace now. But you need to activate it. You need to allow that grace to really come to your life. So something I really encourage these couples is to really be, you know, tangible on what is it that they're, you know, doing different. Now that we're going to have the second matrimony, there has to be like a before and after.
This was
our life before our sacrament. What's going to be our life after the sacrament? Because if things stay the same, guess what? Nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. So that's kind of like the encouragement for, and not only for those that are just contemplating their matrimony, but even those that are seeking, you know, through an engagement process. What is your life going to be before him? And still in your stage of 6 months into your marriage, well, what's, how is this going to look like? What do you want from this? That is your continual marriage enrichment. And that's part of this whole concept of that Rome is asking, that the bishops are asking, you know, how do we accompany couples after they get married? You know, what do we do with them? What do we ask? Well, it's this. What's going on? Where is God's grace? How are you really allowing that grace to come to your life? You know, because it's, I mean, you're just not going to sit there and grace is going to come. You need to do something about it. You know, even these moments that you have like, oh, I'm not feeling understood. But then suddenly you allow yourself to be understood, or you allow the other person to understand you. That's God's grace. And we need to recognize it as God's grace. You can't just say, oh, I did it. It was my intelligence. It's God's grace. So that's kind of like where it leads.
Yeah. And I think every married couple needs to have we're still working on ours, but we need to have a mission, you know, like what's our mission as a married couple, like what has God called us to do? So yeah, I think that's important that every because that's going to look different for every couple. So it's definitely important to have a mission to what you're working towards together. But next question for the both of you, in your time working with you know, couples that are engaged or in the process of getting married or seriously dating couples, what would be your advice, you know, with your time working with them that you've seen something big that is troublesome, like a red flag that they should probably work on, you know, in order to take that next step to become married? It can be a few that you've seen in your time working with them, some red flags, you know, you got to work on that.
I have two concepts that I could share that I think every couple, and even after marriage, we still have to like really continue exploring these two. But I'll let Paola talk.
Maybe it's going to be one of the that you're going to say. But one of them is if the one red flag is if, you know, we notice or you notice that one or the other is taking the their partners like away from the things that they enjoy the most. You know, whether it be pursuing art or whether it be pursuing music or their passions. Like if there's somebody that's pulling you away from that, that's a red flag. Because oftentimes it has to do with the other person's insecurities or not wanting, not wanting the person to still be them. You know, that's a big red flag because in marriage we are one. You know, we come together as one, but we're still two people. Yeah, we come together, but we're still two.
And that's a mystery right there. How does that happen? So true. Keep working on it, okay, guys?
I'll figure it out.
Yeah, so I would say that is how, you know, is your partner, are they taking you away from those things that you're passionate about pursuing? Of course, there's certain things that are not good for a person, right? And there's, you know, vices and that's a whole nother, you know, story, you know, and that's obvious red flags, you know, when there's addictions blatant addictions and things like that, then of course, those are big red flags. But sometimes more subtle, you know, are those, you know, oh no, I don't, you know, I didn't think you should do that anymore. I don't think you should, you know, make music anymore or, you know, do art, you know, whatever it was, that's a red flag. That's one of the red flags.
Yeah, I totally agree with Paula. I mean, those, if you want to be very concrete of the red flags that could be out there, that's a major one. Now, I was thinking more of just concepts that I would recommend couples that are engaged or seriously dating to look into to avoid pain in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's family of origin and perspective.
That's
huge.
Ooh,
yeah,
things.
That's a big one.
Because, you know, we talk about how, you know, I wash the dishes this way, therefore you're washing them wrong.
Yeah.
That's family of origin stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the whole toilet paper, right? It goes this way, it goes that way. The tooth. I mean, we could go on with the list.
No, yeah, yeah. Yes. I'm like, yep. Yeah,
yes.
That was actually mine. I was gonna,
even till today, like, even the way we fix sandwiches, it's different.
Okay.
And we,
I take out a bunch of pieces of bread. And he's just baffled. He's like, I don't understand why you have to take all these pieces out. He takes out just two at a time. He said, because it's a lot of us. I want to take all of them out.
Perspective, right?
So he can say, oh, that's not the right way. Or I can say, that's not the right way.
Yeah. But now we say it's, that's her way. Mm-hmm. And this is my way.
Yeah.
It's okay. And that's
as long as we
way.
Get to the end goal, it's okay.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of practice to get there. So keep practicing, guys. Right? but it's, again, the family origin, I mean, we've been trained either with good habits or bad habits, and they come from our family of origin. And either we do exactly what our families did or complete the opposite. We will not land in the middle because we don't know the middle. We just know what we did and what we didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So then therefore, it's important for us to really explore, what am I bringing from my household, from my family origin, from the place where I grew up, and present that. And then the other way around too, you know? So then we could start looking, and this takes time because, I mean, I remember a couple, they were probably married for at least over 10, 15 years. This was a while back. And the complaint was that, I mean, and this was a very mild complaint because it was during a training. And she said, you know, he opens the drawers from the cabinets, from our bedroom, the dresser.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he does it on purpose. And I walk through there and I hit myself all the time. It's like, I'm tired of this, right? And okay. So then we were exploring family origin. Okay, so how was it when you were growing up? And the man said, you know, I didn't have a dresser. We just had a hole in the wall, literally, and we just threw everything in there.
Mm.
And my mom would take care of, you know, making sure that
crates,
everything.
Like, he had crates, like those wooden crates.
And you know, so he didn't have to be dealing with opening drawers or closing them or anything like that. I mean, that was the least of his worries.
Yeah.
And see how that already came to their marriage and now creating some kind of, I mean, in their words, it was mild, but when I was seeing them interacting, it was like, no, this is a major thing right
here. Yeah.
Because, again, we learn these things. There's some patterns that are just so, we're so accustomed to them. It's so normal to us that we don't see them wrong. Or it's, why is it even bothering you? You know? But it's because the other person has no idea what the heck they're doing, right?
Or one of your family of origin is not afraid of confrontation, of confronting emotions and issues and problems. And then if one of you comes from, you know, a family that, you know, you didn't confront problems. Mm-hmm. And you just kept everything, you know, stuffed, you know, shut in, that also we've seen a lot of that in our own
the problem life. or the it's not as bad that we have different perspectives or different family origins. It is that we don't talk about them or we don't recognize them. So then therefore we don't work on it, and then it will be there, and then it will cause pain, and then, you know, whatever else is going to happen. So you know, before we used to think, this was back like in the 60s, that couples had to do a lot with
compatibility.
Are we compatible or not? And there was actually even tests that were being done on people to see if you know, do we match? Nowadays, we understand that that's not true. It's not about matching. It's about connection, intimacy and connection. How well can we connect and we can be intimate?
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's going to provide the sense of, I love you. All right. And as we're doing that, it has to do a lot also with how are we dealing with our perspectives. How we're dealing with, you know, who am I? And it's going to be your family origin. So to me, again, it's explore those things. Explore family origin. I mean, I've done, there's these wonderful experiences or curriculum that is for, it's technically for, it's called an inventory. and it's for engaged couples, but I've done this with seriously dating couples, mm-hmm. just to like start looking at what are your perspectives?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is your family origin? And some of them have found out that, I don't want to deal with this. Mm-hmm. Others have said, okay, I could do this, mm-hmm. But at least now they're, there's some sense awareness. Of consciousness, awareness mm-hmm. that this is what's going to mm-hmm. happen.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's not to try to prevent anything. It's just you make aware. And if you don't work on it, it's going to cause pain. It will bring pain to relationship.
I remember the couple that came to talk to us because they said that our pastor said we failed the test.
Yes.
To take the communication class because we failed that inventory. What he's talking about where it gives them an idea of where they're at. She said, the pastor said we failed it.
Fail. It's either you really understand each other and you worked on it. I mean, there's evidence that you worked on trying to understand each other, or there's mm-hmm. no evidence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Do you want to add anything?
I guess just what would be your best piece of advice for young couples who are discerning, engaged, or newly married, as someone who's been married for 15 years, what would be your best piece of advice to those young couples?
Pray, and then pray some more. Just nurture your relationship with Christ. Nurture your relationship with Him, and He will guide. The Holy Spirit will guide you into the decision that He wants for you. So nurture that relationship. Yeah. Nurture that relationship with Christ, and then from there, anything that happens will be good, yeah. right? Because He wants good things for us.
I don't know if it's going to be the male perspective, but I would say enjoy that moment of your life. Enjoy that stage of your life and stay in that stage of your life. I always thought it was important. You're in a dating relationship. Live as a dating couple, a good Christian dating couple. Once you engage, transition to that. It's going to look different. And wait for married stuff until you get married. Mm-hmm. Once you get married, you start living that stage. Mm-hmm. Once you have your children, you'll live that childhood mm-hmm. memories with your children, and then they're gonna grow up, and then they're gonna leave one day.
Yeah,
sometimes we think that we need to pursue happiness into what's next without even experiencing what we're living in right now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So then it's important to me. What I would encourage is stay in your stage, live it. Yeah, to the max. Enjoy it.
Yeah, sacrament of the present moment, right?
So, amen.
Any concluding thoughts as we that we can go on forever, but
we're probably gonna come back. Well, let us know if you guys want us back. If not, we understand it's not about us, it's other couples.
Definitely. It's Arnell will make that invitation. But
let me know, please. Just don't cut our relationship like that, okay?
How can they find us?
Yeah, I was gonna say contact information.
You can find it through the diocesan website, but usually there's there. But it's our emails is mmartinez@diocese.org or pmartinez@sbdiocese.org. Mm-hmm. Our phone number is that what it
was? Or your website? Do you guys have a website?
Yes, it's sbmarriageinitiative.org.
Okay.
sbmarriageinitiative.org. And our phone number is 909-475-5390.
There you go.
That's our office number. We'll have Arnell plug all that information into
it. It'll be in the description. Yeah. Or you can go to sbdiocese.org and their office is under there too. So now those listeners out there, you don't have no excuse to be able to contact them and get in connection. Yeah,
so we are looking forward and having more stuff with young couples in a company. That's huge right now. Very important too.
Bring back the beloved
company. Yes, that's in the works.
We're plugging it.
We are.
Help out with that.
Yes,
bringing it into existence.
Oh yeah, please. Yeah. It's still there.
Yes.
And please pray for us.
Always. Definitely. For us. Yes. Yeah.
Because we don't know what we're doing. No, I'm just kidding. No, we don't know what we're doing.
We're always learning.
Well, we're always learning.
Always learning.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, crazy definitely. Well, I guess that any concluding thoughts before we close it up?
Yeah. Well, just thank you for your ministry and being out there in the mission field and
our ministry.
Yeah, it is.
It is our ministry.
Thank you.
Just thank you guys for being here, taking the time. out of your busy schedules to come here, and hopefully those listeners out there are able to grab something, be able to apply it. And thank you to Arnell, and like always, you know, keep supporting this Connected podcast. All the links will be in the description, so you can continue to donate as well, listeners out there, to I don't know your Patreon or no, but it'll be in the description. So yeah, just continue to support this ministry, and like Paula said, continue to pray for them here, for our listeners and our guests here. So we'll just continue to pray for all and everyone. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Different points of view and highs and lows, a new perspective everywhere you go. Open up your mind and drown out the noise of different generations of the girls and boys. So sit back and relax, this Cat the Podcast. Don't overreact if the thoughts are abstract when it's hosted by Catholic Doc Dad. Who knows what's gonna happen?
Hey, what's up, fam?
Different points of view and highs and lows, a new perspective everywhere you go. Open up your mind and drown out the noise and see if this connected.
What's up, fam? To connect generations and situations about faith, life, and whatever comes along.
Respect runaway thoughts like a runaway train. Break into conversation like links of a chain. Make a Hail Mary pass, hope this connects. Have a question for a guest, put it to rest. Live a life of holiness, lead by example. Follow at Catholic.dead and Penny Tangled. Christ leads our way, he's the good shepherd. Pray for one another, be blessed, and be there. Different points of view and highs and lows, a new perspective everywhere you go. Open up your mind and drown out the noise and see if this connected.
This Connected podcast is brought to you by The Cabin. Want to get away and get some peace and quiet and rest? Yes, rest, but not too far away from home or the city. Want to experience a true log cabin feel in the mountains? Well, I have the recommendation for you. The Cabin is a 2-bedroom, 1.5-bath that will do just that. With a beautiful wood fireplace lit and a glass of wine, you are sure to relax. With easy access from the main highway, private parking, easy access with stairs to the entrance, fast Wi-Fi, a full-size kitchen, and all the essential amenities will make your stay a memorable experience. This cozy log cabin was built in the early 60s with its original wood fireplace and a newly transformed deck with beautiful views of the San Bernardino Mountains. So, book your stay at the Cabin in Running Springs, California. The Cabin, located in the San Bernardino Mountains, is a beautiful place to see the beauty of God's creation. I have known the proprietor of the Cabin for many years. She has always supported the youth and young adult ministries of her community, as well as this podcast. Check out The Cabin on Instagram at TheCabin2021. Again, that's at TheCabin2021. TheCabin2021.